Hi everyone, it's Kesonga. Just a reminder that you can listen to all of our podcasts ad-free on the Headspace app. Headspace
Studios. I remember how he showed me his hands shaking, but you can never imagine, you know, it's like. And he told me, I want to kill you right now. I joined the police because I wanted to kill your father and you.
From Headspace Studios, I'm Catherine Schwarzenegger-Pratt. This is The Gift of Forgiveness, a podcast filled with inspiring stories from those who've overcome the unforgivable. On this show, we're telling people's stories as truthfully as possible. Sometimes you might feel uncomfortable or anxious. If that happens, I encourage you to pause and take some deep breaths. Today, I'll be having a conversation with Sebastian Marroquin, the son of notorious Colombian drug lord, Pablo Escobar. Escobar became infamous as the wealthiest drug trafficker in history and the leader of the Medellin cartel, a narco-trafficking organization that wreaked havoc on South America in the 80s and 90s. During his rise to power in the 1970s until his death in a shootout with police in 1993, Pablo Escobar was responsible for thousands of deaths and executions. That included rival gang members, politicians, law enforcement, and innocent civilians. When Escobar died, he left behind a country in turmoil and a challenging future for his wife, son, and daughter. While his son Sebastian could have continued his father's chaos and violence, he chose a very different path. He decided to dedicate his life to spreading peace in Colombia by contacting the families of his father's victims and asking for their forgiveness on behalf of his late father. This journey is seen in his 2009 documentary, Sins of My Father. A decade later, he continues this work as he himself copes with the complicated legacy his father left behind. I first connected with Sebastian in early 2019 to interview him for my book, and a few months ago, we caught up on Zoom while he was quarantined at home in Argentina.
Could you kind of explain how your childhood allowed you to kind of have a relationship with your dad and also understand what he was doing when you were younger?
Well, I remember my childhood, like we can split my childhood in two parts. Let's say the first 7 years of my life was like a regular boy with a family, and I didn't know much about my father's activities at all. But suddenly, you know, I was with him going to the most dangerous and poorest neighborhoods of Medellin. And he was giving a lot of help to the people over there, building some schools and some housing projects for them. And there was a lot of people, you know, saying his name and thanking him about what he was doing. Even the media called him the Robin Hood of Colombia. But suddenly, he was accused of, you know, being a drug dealer.
Early on, Escobar used drug money to fund humanitarian projects in Colombia. That made him a hero to the poor. He was so popular, he got elected to Congress. But when the Minister of Justice, Rodrigo Lara Bonilla, publicly denounced him as a drug lord, Escobar reacted by having him killed.
After that, my life and my childhood changed a lot.
Escobar was afraid of the government's retaliation on his family, so they fled for their lives to Panama. It was here that Escobar came clean to his 7-year-old son, who at the time was known as Juan Pablo Escobar.
He told me, "Hey, son, I want you to know that I am a bandit and that's what I do for a living." So since that moment, my dad didn't have any problem to read the newspaper and watch the TV news about him with me. And he didn't have any problem to say, yes, I am responsible for those crimes or not. So I was very aware of his actions, his criminal activities from that moment. But of course, I was a 7-year-old kid. I was receiving a lot of love from him. So as a father, I don't have any complaints against him. But of course, I had a lot of complaints about him as a human being and how he deal with death and violence and terrorism and the drug trafficking business. He was in both.
Did you, when you were little, did you grow up around, you know, seeing drugs?
Well, I remember I had a conversation with my dad. He sat me down and he told me, look, son, we have to talk about drugs. And he put in front of me on the table all the drugs available at that time. You know, like I remember there was like 10 kind of drugs. I remember cocaine, crack, LSD, marijuana. And he explained to me every single drug, every effect and how these drugs could harm you. And he told me, look, son, a brave man is the one who can say no to drugs, you know, because it's easy to feel tempted. And don't let your friends tell you that you're not a brave man because you're not trying drugs. So he was perhaps one of the biggest drug dealers on earth at that time. And at the same time, he was teaching to his own son, hey, don't try and cocaine because that's poison. That's a poison to sell, not to take. He used to say that to me.
A lot of Sebastian's life has been spent processing these contradictions. This was a man the world knew as public enemy number one. But at home, he was just dad.
I understand what he was doing, but, you know, there's a lot of contradictions in my father's life because at the same time, he was saying to me that he loved me. You know, he was doing a lot of harm to a lot of people, and that brings a lot of consequences to our lives.
Before Sebastian had kids himself, he wanted to make sure that he was certain that he wouldn't be raising a son in the same environment his father raised him in. He began his work on forgiveness by reaching out to the community that his father had caused so much destruction in. It took Sebastian 20 years to get to a place where he felt he could have a son and raise him in a healthy environment. Sebastian's son is now 7 years old, the same age Sebastian was when he found out the truth about what his father did for a living. Now that Sebastian is a father himself, he says he has a greater awareness of why his dad encouraged him to lead a different life.
Well, my father was, you know, was a very shy guy. He was very humble and very wise too. He never encouraged me to follow him in any activity. He was always telling me, you have to study, you have to be a better person. I didn't have the chance to study, but you do. So you have to take this as an advantage and be someone else. When his enemies understood that the only thing he cared was his family, that's why they started to attack us directly. So I am very aware of the consequences of his violence because of that.
Early one morning in 1988, when Sebastian was 11, a massive car bomb went off outside the Medellin apartment that he, his mother, and his sister were living in. The bomb didn't harm the family, but it left two dead security guards and a crater about 16 feet deep on the street in front of their home. This failed murder attempt against the Escobar family kicked off a brutal war between the Medellin and Cali cartels. That feud lasted until Escobar's death in 1993. It was one of the bloodiest periods in South American history.
Your father passed away when you were around 16 years old. And by that time, he was responsible for around 3,000 deaths, correct?
Yes, that's sadly it's correct.
When you found out that your father had died, you made a declaration that day that you then took back.
I was on the phone with my father, and he was telling to me how to answer an interview that I received from a very well-known magazine in Colombia. And I was telling him, look, Dad, don't call anymore. He always taught me, don't ever use the phone because it will bring death to your home. So I was, you know, feeling very bad because he was on the phone all the time without taking care of his own safety. So he hang up, and after 10 minutes, I receive a call from a journalist, and she told me, your father is dead. The police confirmed. She never told me that she was recording the call. She kept asking, what are you going to do? And I answered to her like seven times. we don't want to talk right now. We don't want to talk right now. And I kept saying that until, you know, I said, I'm going to kill them all myself. I was thinking about how to become in Pablo Escobar 2.0, you know, how much violence I was going to prepare to avenge my father's death. That's how I reacted. And of course, she published this. And of course, what I learned from that is that the power of saying, of declaring things, you know, because you don't realize the power of every single word you can pronounce. How can that affect your life? And that truly affect my life very much. You know, it was like 5 seconds of threats that became in 25 years of exile. Since then, I understood the power of every single word we are about to pronounce and to think about it twice before doing that, because that truly can affect your life for decades.
Sebastian's first impulse to avenge his father's death is understandable. He had just been told his father died and was now being pushed to react publicly on behalf of his family and dictate the future for his father's followers. After making the statement on the radio, Sebastian quickly realized that his statement was the same violent mentality that he had begged his father to leave behind his whole life.
I remember how many conversations I had with my father asking him to stop. I remember that I was asking him, please, Dad, you know, don't put any more bombs. You are killing a lot of people, innocent people, doing a lot of harm to families you didn't even know. But he was full of excuses in every single conversation. And he told me, you forgot that the first terrorist attack was against you, your little sister, and your mother. So I'm just answering to that. But at the same time, I realized that that won't bring my life and my father's life back again. So I understood that, and I was looking at my mother's and my little sister and my girlfriend at the time, now my wife. And I said, if I took that path, I will never be free. And so I called the media and I asked, you know, I told them that I was sorry, that I made a mistake. I said something that I shouldn't say. And I apologized for that. And I made a promise, you know, I made a promise that if I had the chance to bring peace or make peace for Colombia, I will do it without thinking.
Which you could have, you know, you could have just lived your life and done exactly, become, as you said, Pablo Escobar 2.0. But you made such a dramatic shift. What do you think that was in you that made you do that?
Well, I think that was one of the craziest decisions that I took in my life, you know, because it was the easy path for me was to take control of my father's organization only to survive, you know, because who wants to talk about peace when more than half of the country wants you dead? If you call the 911, there will be no help for you. There will be a group of criminals ready to kill you. You know, I realized how surrounded I was, you know. They had men everywhere. There was nobody taking care of us. So we were surrounded by enemies, literally. And they all wanted us dead. You know, there was a $4 million bounty on my head. So it was very difficult for me to take the peace path for my life and to declare that, because there was no way out. You know, it was almost impossible for me to survive if I took that path. And I didn't realize how I was going to do it, but I felt, you know, deep in my heart, if I truly wanted to survive, that was the only way out, trying to make peace with every single enemy of my father. My father already tried violence, and that didn't work out well.
It was too dangerous for the Escobar family to stay in Colombia, so they decided to flee. When they first arrived in Argentina, they all took on new names. Juan Pablo Escobar became Sebastian Marroquin. But the cover didn't last long, and after 5 years, he was discovered.
So it was a huge worldwide scandal. Everyone was talking about us. Every single media was saying guilty, 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 and guilty. But when the Supreme Court set us free and they realized that we did nothing wrong. There was no news about that. So I saw the opportunity, and I talked with my mother and my little sister and my wife, and I told them, look, there's no point to hide now, because now everybody knows our new identities. If you Google Sebastian Marroquin or Juan Pablo Escobar, you will find exactly the same information. So there's no point to keep hiding from life. And I feel that I have the opportunity to make a documentary and to use this as an excuse to approach to my father's victims to start asking for their forgiveness. Of course, many of my friends, they told me, you're crazy, what you are doing is not good, you are just going to open some old wounds and that will bring you more trouble than the ones you already have, so don't do it. And because, you know, we were used to solve things through violence in Colombia. That's a fact.
Right.
So when somebody start talking about peace, reconciliation, forgiveness, it's like, what are you talking about? You know, you're crazy. But I have to try it. You know, I have to do it.
Sebastian teamed up with film director Nicholas Intel. They began working on a documentary called Sins of My Father. The film documented Sebastian's journey to ask his father's victims for forgiveness. The first thing he had to do was sit down and write letters to the surviving families of his father's most prominent victims.
It took me like 15 days to write the proper letter, because I didn't even knew how, which words, you know, to write down, because how can you start a conversation with your father's victims, with someone that caused you so much pain? You know, it's very, very hard.
Yeah.
There's no school, there's no university to go and to learn. There's no class about forgiveness.
Is there something that you say to them?
No, that's the hardest part for sure. I never know how to start properly a conversation with a victim. Imagine, what would you say? Good morning or good afternoon? It's like the worst start for a conversation like that. So we are used to start conversation like, hey, hello, how are you? It's like, but that's not a way to start a conversation with a victim. It's very hard. It's very hard.
The first person Sebastian wrote to was Rodrigo Lara, the son of the Minister of Justice that his father had had killed. Just like Sebastian, Rodrigo was named after his father, and both men grew up in the wake of their father's deaths.
He took a plane and he came to Buenos Aires and he visited me, and we ended up with a big hug. It was not planned at all. We had one of the greatest conversations that I remember about forgiveness and about healing and about how can we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
He was explaining to me, like, it's difficult to grow when you have such a big shadow next to you, because he was talking about my father like a big tree. There was a big shadow next to me, and it was very hard for me to move forward in life and to grow up in those conditions. But we ended up giving us a great hug, and that became a historical hug from Colombian people. The media portrayed that, you know, it's like, this is like fiction, not a documentary. It became like something like fiction, you know, because nobody expected that the son of Rodrigo Lara, the Minister of Justice, who was killed by my father's orders, was going to give a hug to the son of Pablo Escobar. And that really happened. And I feel proud about that. And I feel a lot of hope. And that's why I continue doing it, because I feel better.
Has there been one conversation that you've had with a victim of your father in particular that you found to be really challenging or emotional?
Well, I think that every victim has a story that has to be told and recognized. But I remember that, you know, the Avianca flight, I met the guy who represents the victims, most of them.
The flight Sebastian is referring to is Avianca Flight 203, a passenger plane that Pablo Escobar bombed in 1989. Escobar was targeting presidential candidate Cesar Gaviria Trujillo. The bomb detonated midair, killing all 107 innocent passengers on board and three people on the ground who were killed by debris. Trujillo ended up not being on that flight and went on to become president of Colombia. The man Sebastian met with not only represented the Avianca victims and their families, he had lost someone himself.
He was telling me his dad's story. His dad took the plane. He was about to retire the same day.
Wow.
And he was going to Cali, to the city, to say goodbye to his old partners from job, and he was about to retire that day. He was a very innocent man, and every single family was exactly the same. But when I ended the conversation with him and we say goodbye, everything was well. But I felt so bad after, because I start to realize that it wasn't just only one guy. It was more than 107 people and families behind him. So I cannot tell you that if I am traumatized because of that conversation, but I felt so bad for the next 48 hours, you know, that I couldn't continue recording the documentary and doing things as they were planned, because, you know, I needed to stop. I needed to think about. I needed to have a drink and to just to make some prayers or something like that. Of course, the director of the documentary was saying, what's going on? And we saw you talking to a lot of victims, but after you talk with these guys, like you changed totally. I told him, look, I wasn't talking just with one single victim. It wasn't just the one who my father killed. It was the rest of them, you know, so there's a lot of people I met today, even if I talk only with one guy. You know, I felt like I have a knife in my stomach.
When your father was alive, did he ever express any sort of regret for what he was doing or ask for forgiveness at all?
Sadly, I would really like to answer yes, but sadly, I never saw him in that way. He was always full of excuses to commit more violence, and he didn't have the opportunity to let forgiveness be part of his life.
We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, this series is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation, mindfulness, movement, and sleep content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it. Learn more at headspace.com. Over the years, Sebastian's dedication to spreading the message of forgiveness and peace has made him a respected figure in Colombia, despite the shadow of his father's legacy. Still, Sebastian is reminded of the pain his father caused everywhere he goes. One of the most profound encounters came when he was filming another documentary at the ruins of La Catedral, a prison where his father was briefly held, which has since become a tourist attraction. When Sebastian was there filming, a tour guide recognized him.
So he was like a regular guy, and he approached me. He started saying good things about me, that he was following me on the social media, and I was doing the right thing, etc. But then he started his own story. He showed me his hands shaking. He was part of the police, and he said, I joined the police because I wanted to kill your father and you.
Wow.
And so he took out of his wallet a picture, and he showed me 160 men who were his partners. And he told me, look, only three of us survive. This is why I'm shaking, because my body said that I need to kill you, but I know deep in my soul that I don't have to do it, because you're a good guy and you choose the right path.
Wow.
It's a scary moment too, because I know he had the powers and the skills to kill me. And he was saying that in front of the cameras, you know, he didn't care. And of course, I asked him for forgiveness, because I told him, look, I am very aware that my father not only killed 157 of your partners, he killed 500 policemen in 1 month in Medellin City. So I'm sorry for that. I don't know how can I ask for your forgiveness, but I have to do it right now. I don't have another possibility, another chance to do it. So I asked him, And, you know, I think the times of the universe are perfect, so everything happens for a reason. And he was there with some tourists in La Catedral, and I was there with some journalists in La Catedral, exactly at the same time, at the same moment. So that gave me the opportunity to meet this guy. He was willing to forgive, and he was living a very strange situation. He told me, I'm paying my bills thanks to your dad now. So now it's like we are becoming friends, and he sent me from time to time WhatsApp messages, and he invited me to lunch. So everything is well now, thanks to forgiveness and thanks to, you know, to be willing to talk and to be willing to face these kind of situations.
Right.
When you are asking for forgiveness, you know, everybody understands that you are not a threat. And I feel safe because of that.
After decades of making amends on behalf of his father, Sebastian looks forward to cultivating a new legacy for his family. He hopes that his journey of owning the history of pain he was born into will allow the world to simply see him for who he is, separate from his father's actions.
I am an architect, I am an industrial designer, a writer, a lecturer, a father, a pacifist. I'm a different kind of guy. I'm not Pablo Escobar 2.0. For life, I will be pursued by the authorities just because I am the son of Pablo Escobar. You know, and I have to understand that. But because I am an individual and I wanted to be seen as an individual, not as the son of.
Sebastian says it's not just for him either. He wants to be a good person for his son, like his father was to him, but without the contradictions.
My son is also a guarantee that I'm going to behave, that I'm going to continue in the path of respecting the law and the life of everybody. That's a promise that I made to him. You know, I will never leave you a past exactly the same as the one I have to face when my father passed away, because I have to negotiate with my father's enemies for my life, you know, and I don't want my son, when I pass away, that he has to go and have meetings with the rest of the cartels and to see how is he going to survive. I don't want to leave him a life like that. So I'm building a better future for him through forgiveness, through peace and reconciliation in a way.
He's learned that forgiveness isn't black and white, and the gray areas can be their own source of deeper understanding. These gray areas are what have allowed his father's victims to so openly embrace Sebastian.
I'm not hiding to my son the truth behind his grandfather. I'm just trying to explain one day at a time what his grandfather did in the past. But of course, I'm just trying to raise him in a way that you have to show some respect for your grandfather, because I know that if you had the opportunity to meet him, he will only give you good advices and love. And now he's very aware that his grandfather was a criminal, but I'm trying to be as respectful as I can be as a son and as a witness of such a lot of victims. And that's why I'm explaining to my son that my lectures and that everything that I do, that the books I wrote, that the documentaries I produce, is for a reason. No, it's so we are all aware of this, so we will never dare to repeat it. And I told him that perhaps his grandfather showed us to the world the path we should not take.
It's now been 27 years since Pablo Escobar's death. I asked Sebastian if he feels that Colombia has healed. He says that while conflicts do continue, he's seen a philosophical shift in how Colombians think about violence and retribution.
As Colombians, we are very used to violence. You know, every single family in Colombia can tell you a story of violence, for sure. It's very hard to overcome this kind of situation that perhaps for our society are seen as normal. Today, all of that is changing. We all understand that there's no way out if you see war as the way out. We have to overcome the pain and the fear and the hate and the war, and we have to find ways to put an end to violence in our country. If you have to use guns to defend your own ideas, perhaps you have to check your own ideas, you know. Peace is the only way out. the success rate about the forgiveness process in my life, it's been, you know, 100%. Until now, until today, I didn't have a story or something that I remember that somebody said to me, no, I won't forgive you or your father. That brings a lot of hope to me, because when people can understand that forgiveness, it's not about forgetting things, but about healing and about letting the pain go out of your life. That will make you a better person. That will allow you to live in a better way. It's a process. I don't know how it's going to end. And I promise myself I will never put an end to this until I have the chance to talk with the last victim. But there's no list. So I'm just trying to find them, every single one of them.
Is there any part of you that feels any anger or resentment that you have left over towards your father, or do you not have any of that?
No, I cannot be the judge of my dad because I'm part of him. For me, it's like when we are sons, we are here in this world just to be part of the biggest love of our own fathers and mothers. So it's very impossible for me to think about, you know, that I should condemn my father for his actions. I think that's God's job, not my job. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity many times during his life, and I was the only one who was talking to him directly and saying, don't put any more bombs. He was really aware that I was against his own violence, that I will never approve that I will never applaud that. So I think there's nothing left to say to him. I think that God gave me the opportunity to talk about this face to face with my father. But among all those things, you know, what remains is the love that I have for him and the respect that I show for the victims at the same time.
Sebastian hopes that his work can inspire others to reconcile with their trauma. While it can be unbelievably hard to ask for forgiveness on behalf of his father, who caused so much unnecessary pain, he has witnessed countless people forgive out of a desire to have peace, reconciliation, and to live their lives free from the pain that once consumed Colombia. Thanks so much for listening, and thank you to Sebastian Marroquin for opening up about his personal journey. I commend him for choosing to dedicate his life to making such a huge difference in the future of Colombia and the way forgiveness is viewed. Sebastian's documentary, Sins of My Father, is available online, and his book, Pablo Escobar, My Father, is available wherever books are sold. The Headspace app has thousands of hours of mindfulness and meditation content for you, including meditations on forgiveness, grief, noting, and more. Download it today and try it for free. The Gift of Forgiveness is hosted and executive produced by me, Catherine Schwarzenegger-Pratt. You can find my book, also called The Gift of Forgiveness, wherever books are sold. This episode was produced by Monique Laborde and Otis Gray. Sound designed by Dan Kroll. From Headspace Studios, the executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Selzer, and Sam Rogaway. This podcast is produced in partnership with Cadence 13.